Hello and welcome to another episode of the Preachers Forum podcast. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm coming to you from The Rock here in North Wales, where I live with my wife, Lisa. Thanks again for joining me for this edition of this series of podcasts that I'm doing, which I'm calling British Accents. And basically, the British Accents series is a chance for me as a transplanted American living here in the United Kingdom for nearly 12 years now. It's my chance to bring you conversations with a wide range of British people. In this series so far, I've interviewed several Brits. We've talked about a lot of things. We've talked about God, their experiences of various churches here in Great Britain. We've talked about religion and just so much more. And really, that's the aim of the Preacher's Forum, by the way. It's all about applying critical thinking to topics such as God, the church, and spirituality. And of course, what better way to think critically or to learn how to think critically than by exposing yourself to new and intriguing points of view. In this episode of British Accents, I'm bringing you another one of these points of view. This session is the first half of a conversation I had with my friend Ryan Warren, and we recorded it up in Carlisle, England. Now, Carlisle is one of my favorite places to visit because it's what they call a border town. In other words, it's virtually located right on the border between Scotland and England. And if you know anything about history, as you can no doubt imagine, there has been no love lost between the Scots and the English over the centuries. In fact, along the side of the Carlisle Cathedral, you can still see the marks from the bullet holes where the Scottish Jacobites, who were the supporters of the Stuart cause to the English throne, they were executed right up against the walls of the Carlisle Cathedral in the middle of the 18th century. Now, since I'm also a fan of World War I history, I can't resist throwing out another piece of historical trivia about Carlisle that might be of interest to you. Now, did you know that the American president, Woodrow Wilson, his mother Janet was born in Carlisle? And Wilson, of course, was the president during World War I. Now, there's another interesting connection between Wilson and the town or the city of Carlisle. He visited Carlisle in December 1918, just a month after the armistice was declared on November 11th, 1918, that officially ended the four-year-long Great War, or World War I. Thousands of cheering citizens of Carlisle lined the streets to welcome Wilson to their city, and they were out to express their gratitude for America's part in finally winning the war that had dragged on for so many years. Now, maybe I'm just being a little bit naughty, but there is a part of me that has to wonder, you know, if President Donald Trump came to visit Carlisle today, would he enjoy the same reception as Wilson did? Now, I wonder. So, yes, if it's history you're interested in, then Carlisle is definitely a fantastic place to visit. Now, speaking of history, one of my favorite spots to visit whenever I'm up in Carlisle is Hadrian's Wall, which since 1987 has been named as a World Heritage Monument. Okay, what's it all about? Now, what does Hadrian's Wall have to do with my conversation that I'm bringing you here with Ryan Warren, other than the fact that we took a trip out there, we visited Hadrian's Wall before we did this recording? Well, now, I think there's some spiritual lessons, some life lessons, too, that we can learn from studying Hadrian's Wall. Okay, now it's time for a brief history lesson, which, as you'll know if you listen to any of my other podcasts, I am very passionate about history. Now, I've mentioned in other podcasts that one of the things that I love about living here in the United Kingdom is the history that sits literally on the doorstep. And I think it helps put things into perspective, too. Now, for example, I'm fond of telling my American friends and my American family members when they come over here for a visit, that the Romans were here in Britain longer than America has been an independent nation, nearly twice as long, just about. So that kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it? And you go back and look at when all this happened. Well, the Romans first began permanently to conquer Britain back in 43 AD. And then in 117 AD, Hadrian became the emperor of Rome. He became Caesar. And according to historical records, he visited Britain in 122 AD. And what Hadrian did was he decided that the best thing he could do was to build a wall across what's now the northern border, basically between England and Scotland, right up in that area. And so over the course of the next 6 years or so, they figured that approximately 15,000 legionaries and auxiliary soldiers, they built this wall. They first built one out of turf, and then later they built the wall out of stone. Now, this wall was an amazing piece of engineering. I mean, in the end, it's nearly 80 miles long, and essentially it goes from east to west coast, coast to coast. Well, now, what was the purpose of this wall? Well, basically, Hadrian made the decision that this would be the most remote boundary of Rome. In other words, this wall marked the final border between Roman civilization and, of course, what they viewed at the time as, you know, barbarian culture on the other side of the wall, the Scottish side, basically. The wall basically marked the furthest, most northern point that the Roman Empire ever reached. It really never went further than Hadrian's Wall. And in order to guard that border, the wall was manned by the Roman legionaries for the next 300 years. That is, until the Roman legions were finally recalled back to Rome in the 5th century. And after the legionaries left Britain, of course, if you know your history, the western half of the Roman Empire collapsed too, and without any soldiers to guard it and take care of it, well, Hadrian's Wall more or less fell into disrepair. But, you know, even today, despite the fact that over the centuries, local farmers and other people, they robbed the nicely squared stones and they used it to build their own houses, their barns and stables, most of the original foundation of Hadrian's Wall still stands. You can walk along its entire length even. You can see the outline of the forts. They put a fort every mile or so along the wall. And even now, nearly 1,900 years after it was built, Hadrian's Wall still stands as a testimony to the skill and the dedication of the soldiers that built it. So, where's the spiritual lesson in Hadrian's Wall? What life lessons was I talking about? Well, to me, the wall can be seen as sort of a metaphor for life. Think about it. Many people reach a stage in their life where they basically say to themselves, look, no more. I'm not moving forward any longer. It's time to start building a wall, something I can take refuge behind. You know, I'm not going to be exploring anymore. I'm not really interested in finding out, learning new things about that strange and dangerous, weird world out there. I'm not going to move beyond the confines of my wall. And that's exactly what they do. They build up their wall. It's a wall of self-protection, safety, and security. Or so it would seem. Now, it's not all bad. I mean, on the plus side, those conceptual walls we build for ourselves, well, what do they do for us? Well, they do provide safety, security, you know, things we think we need. We so desperately crave safety and security, don't we? And, you know, we can find a lot of people who think the same ways that we do, too. They're more than happy to stand alongside us behind that wall. That wall provides a barrier from a lot of strange new ideas and those people from different tribes out there. You know, and building the wall can seem like a really great idea. I can certainly see the attraction of having those stout defenses to take refuge behind, just like the soldiers did along Hadrian's Wall. But of course, as with anything, there's a negative aspect, isn't there, to huddling behind a stout wall of our own creation. While it seems, on the one hand, to provide safety and security, on the other hand, it also forces us to remain static. What happens is we trade our safety, our security, for growth, for maturity. You see, hiding behind that wall, it means that although we're reasonably safe, by the same token, we're no longer expanding. We're no longer moving anywhere in life. Now, that wall doesn't have to be a religious wall either. I mean, it could represent our political views just as easily. What I'm describing here is basically our worldview. And so my question to you is this. Do you want to build that wall to hide behind for the rest of your life? Or would you rather explore that scary and dangerous world that's out there? I mean, yes, it is certainly risky, absolutely. But as the saying goes, there's no change without growth, and there's no growth without change. So as you're listening in to my conversation with Ryan Warren, which is coming up in a minute, just think about this image of building a wall. And you're going to hear Ryan challenge us in this interview. He says, I want to see beyond the veil of humanity. In other words, he's trying to look beyond whatever labels tend to get slapped on people or putting people in boxes. You know, is life all about our accomplishments, like the degrees that we've earned or other things we've achieved that we can point to and take some pride in? You know, and where do we gain a sense of value? Do we gain a sense of value from the things that we do? Or is it about the person that we are in the process of becoming? Well, if that sounds intriguing to you at all, then be sure and listen in to the first half of my conversation with Ryan Warren coming up in a minute. Another British Accent podcast episode here on the Preacher's Forum podcast. All right, hey everybody, this is Clint. I'm sitting here with a good friend of mine, Ryan Warren. Do you want to say hi to everybody?
Hey everybody.
We are sitting in beautiful downtown Carlisle, England, and it's been a long journey, hasn't it, for a lot of reasons. Ryan just came down from Glasgow, Scotland today. How long did it take you to get here to Carlisle?
Longer than it should have, yeah. Thanks to a certain rail company based in Scotland.
Which will remain nameless, I'm sure.
Remain nameless. but yeah, it should have took an hour and... Hour and 45 took a bit longer than that, but yeah. Here now.
This is part of the British experience, is delayed trains, late trains, cancelled trains.
Yeah.
It's the way it is, you know. But I drove up from North Wales, so we're kind of meeting in the middle.
Yeah.
So this is really good. We just had a really good meal and a couple of good pints. Speaking of pints, what are you drinking now, Ryan?
I am on what appears to be some sort of craft cider. I didn't even know they existed.
Until tonight.
So it is a Leaf Twister, traditional Big Apple cider. It's a...
And who makes this Leaf Twister?
Thatcher's. It's a can of cider.
It's a can of cider.
That's pretty much all it is.
There's probably something wrong with that, but if it tastes good...
It tastes okay.
Hey, it's not bad. And in honor of you, since you came down from Scotland, I am drinking the BrewDog 5 a.m. Saint. But it's an American red ale, but it's brewed in Scotland.
Yeah, yeah.
So BrewDog, I think they're good, but, you know.
Possibly in Glasgow, in fact.
Yep, it could be. So in honor of where you're coming down from. Yeah. So yeah, this is really great. I'm really excited to be chatting with Ryan. There's a lot of stuff that we have to talk about. Your story, I'm very interested to hear where you're at now, how you ended up in Glasgow with your family and everything. When did we first meet? I would say you're one of the first persons that I met when we first moved to this country it was 11 and a half, almost 12 years ago. We met at a church in Chester, which should remain nameless too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is close to 11 years
gotta
ago.
Be. Yeah.
I didn't even realize that you guys were still so new to Chester at the time. I think I started coming to the church, it's nearly 12 years ago now.
Yeah.
And there are a few faces that kind of stuck out. And I think for me, it was my first introduction to church.
Right.
And
met us first.
I met an American couple. So I'm like, oh wow, there's like Americans here. This this is like, this is a real church. This is like, whoa, what is this? So I definitely think, yeah, I was like, oh yeah, that seems cool. There's Americans here.
Yeah. And I will say, you were the first guy that I met in this country who had a full sleeve tattoo. Your whole arm was
sleeved up. Yeah.
And I had tattoos then, but I'd never gone below the t-shirt sort of line, down lower. And I think I always admired that you were a Christian with visible tattoos, shall we say. And you've inspired me to get both my right and left arm sleeves done. So you bear some credit for this ink over here.
Wow, I don't.
So that's cool. Yeah. At least, but maybe it is. I don't know if it is.
Well, I mean, the tattoos predated my Christian faith, and they were always at the beginning something I was really self-conscious about, because you just didn't see heavily tattooed Christian people walking about, and my identity then was all in the kind of heavy metal kind of scene, and so becoming a Christian was, it was quite difficult. Like, there was a lot of challenges for me in my kind of social circles of, right, okay, you're a metalhead.
Yeah.
You don't become a Christian. Ooh. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, what's this really about? And that was the perception of my friends at the time. They didn't get, you know, what this was. And they kind of felt like, because I was becoming a Christian, I was going to start judging them. Mm. You know, we were all smoking pot, getting hammered at the, well, I was going to say at the weekend, but like most, anytime we could. Heavy metal is not particularly rock and roll unless you're into Striper.
Don't go there, man. I was into Striper.
Striper.
We used to play a lot of their songs when they first came out. I saw them on their first ever tour through the States back in, well, a long time ago. Yeah. The late 80s, let's say. Yeah.
Well, so 12 years ago, when you had just become a Christian and you're a metalhead and you Google Christian metal 12 years ago, the first name that comes up is Striper.
Yep.
So you instantly fall in love with them, whether you think they're any good or not, because you're like, I'm a Christian now, and I want Christian metal, because that's what I'm meant
to
listen to.
That's what you're supposed to do,
And, you know, things have developed and changed over the years. So.
So basically, you and I met when we first started going to that church in Chester, but then not long after that, you went off to Bible college.
Yeah.
So... then I think the next time I saw Ryan was down in Swansea, which is in South Wales. Now, Ryan was a part of a Bible college that doesn't exist anymore. We can name this because it's gone, isn't it? What was the name of the school that you were
a
part of?
The Bible College of Wales.
Original name?
Pretty original name.
What a history.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about the history?
Yeah.
The school had been around for a long time.
100 years. It was founded by... Okay, you might need to edit here.
It was Reese something, wasn't it?
Samuel and Reese Howells were the founders of the Bible. Well,
a couple of Welshmen.
Yeah, so one's the father of the other, and I can't quite remember which is which.
But a father and son team?
Yeah, I kind of guess that must have been the way that happened. And so basically, in the early 1900s, the revival around Wales and all that sort of
business. Yeah, the Welsh revival.
You know, this place thrived. And from that, you know, a college where the intake per year was 100, 150 students.
Yeah.
People were coming to faith, going through the college, going out on ministry. And this place had this identity as somewhere that you would go to be trained and equipped in ministry.
Yeah.
Fast forward 100 years.
Mm. Now you're there.
I'm there. I'd been a Christian less than a year when a friend of ours spoke to me at my baptism and said that, you know, you've got a big mouth and God's going to use it. Which I didn't really recognize in myself at the time. that was confirmed by two other people coming forward and saying very similar things.
Did they say you had a big mouth? And
they pretty much did. It was almost like the same word for word by all three of them. And I didn't know any of these three people. Ah. And I'd been a Christian 9 months. I mean, not overtly public Christian. Yeah, I was just like this guy in the church. I got baptized and they all came forward and spoke that word. And from there, it got really intense. And that's how I ended up at Bible college. You know, that same person spoke to me and said, "Have you ever thought about going to a Bible college?"
Yeah.
And at that very same time, I was thinking, I was kind of getting bored of my work and I was thinking, what am I going to do with my life? Maybe I should go back to uni.
Yeah.
I was like 23 years old at the time. And he said that to me and I looked into the Bible college that he was teaching at.
Mm.
And a few months later, I'm there.
There you were. So you found yourself there in Swansea. Now, the interesting thing, we were talking about this earlier today because we went out to see Hadrian's Wall.
Well, part of it anyway. It's not far from Carlisle, and we were walking around the part of the wall, and we were talking about the values that this Bible college had. Now, I went down there and taught a class one time and actually interviewed to be a teacher there, but I didn't get the job because they wanted me to move down there, and I couldn't at the time. But you were a student at that point, and there was a really cool community thing. Everybody basically lived on the campus. They owned a piece of property, didn't they? And it was a beautiful property with a beautiful garden. And the students, you had to work on the grounds or do maintenance one day a week, wasn't it?
We had a guy's dorm and a girl's dorm.
Yeah.
On opposite sides of the road.
As they should be.
There was quite, you know, strict rules. There was like a curfew in place. And I'm like 23-year-old guy at a Bible college with a curfew.
You've been out.
there was a work day, which was part of our character building.
Yeah.
Some days you would be sweeping leaves in the rain along the kind of like 100-foot driveway.
Yeah.
And by the time you got to, from one end of the driveway to the other, it would be completely full of leaves again.
And you'd be soaking wet.
Yeah, soaking wet. You would be, some days you'd just be chopping wood. Some days it's just cleaning toilets, you know.
Yeah.
This was, so as I say, you know, the campus itself was a very old campus. Maintaining that and keeping that came down to the students. There was a few staff that were employed to do that, but the students, as part of their development and as part of their ministry, was kind of maintaining that. And you know, the phrase that got thrown at us a lot was character building. Like, why are we doing this? Doing this again? Like, I'm sick of doing this.
Sick of raking leaves in the rain.
Yeah,
because it always rains in Wales anyway.
Mr. Miyagi moment, you know. It truly
wax
was.
Wax on, wax off. Yeah.
Afterwards, you look back and you go, actually, do you know, the concentration, the patience, the, you know, giving of yourself.
Yeah.
Those certain elements that go into to kind of what we were doing.
Yeah, service. Yeah,
it was. And at the time, you know, you're a young, daft kid at Bible college, and you're just like, why am I doing this? I want to be out doing something different.
Doing great things for God. Yeah. And you're raking leaves in the rain.
Yeah, you don't see the value of it in the moment. And I think that's a large part of all the lessons that we can learn is you might not see it at that moment, but take time to reflect and, you know, you can actually see what benefit that
perspective is. A hard thing to achieve, isn't it? And even now, I mean, you know, trying to get that life balance and perspective, isn't it? It's so difficult, you know, but you look back on it now and you think, wait a minute, that was actually character building, even though you're thinking, this is crap. They're making me rake leaves in the rain. But there was a cool, and what struck me was when I went down there with our mutual friend, Tim, who's his name.
Yeah.
We could say that. I thought, what a great community feel. This does not feel like the quote unquote typical Bible college. Because where I went to Bible college in the States, it was much more run along the university sort of lines. You know, it was a typical school, I guess you could say, with, you know, a campus, and they had maintenance people. We didn't do any work, obviously, like that. But they wanted to get to what you guys had.
Yeah.
You know, they made us do student ministries and things to get us out in the real world. And ironically, a lot of the students didn't like that, which was ironic because they were there at Bible college training for ministry, at least ostensibly. And yet, when they had to go work in a church or something, they were upset about it.
Yeah.
You know, but you guys had a really cool vibe. Now, unfortunately, they sold that campus, didn't they? You're the end of your second year, somewhere around there?
So, at the end of the second year, they moved. I mean, the community that we had, as I say, in the moment, there were times where you're like, when will this end?
Yeah, breaking leaves in the rain. Yeah.
But there was also a lot of real appreciation for what we had as well. I mean, we had, you know, 30 students in each of the academic years. I got my bachelor in theology through that. So, it had the blend of the university academic as well as the community. But we were living together, praying together. We were looking at what our perception of ministry was. We were discussing daily. You know, we lived in this Bible college bubble.
Yeah.
And yet we also had really strong ties with the community for the ministry that we were doing. You know, a few of us just simply went out into the streets of Swansea and just started, you know, hanging out with the homeless guys, buying them lunch, trying to talk to them, not trying to convert them or anything like that. But, like, we just saw that there was an absolute, you know, need for some humanity to be shown in that. And we there was lots of great ideas. There's lots of great work that went on there. But the people that I was there with, you know, unfortunately, we don't have a stronger contact now because when you live in this intense bubble, you have these really intense relationships.
Yeah.
And when you kind of go off and, you know, some live in Chicago, some live in South Africa, some live in Cambridge now, and I'm up in Scotland.
Yeah, you're spread out.
Life changes, you know, your priorities change, and the life that you lived, that community, is really hard to then try and replicate outside of it.
Yeah.
So when the college upped and moved from Swansea and this beautiful campus and this kind of amazing community and moved itself to Rugby, which is, you know, we've gone from a beautiful seaside town to the most central point, furthest away from any, like,
dead in the center of the country.
With not a lot happening in that little town.
Yeah.
It very quickly, for myself, I can't speak on behalf of my other college pals, it quickly kind of dispersed all of my enthusiasm and my kind of excitement for that, because I went from intense bubble and intense relationships to distant and back to my kind of normal church where you didn't have that real close...
Yeah, the community.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because after you graduated, I went down to that Rugby campus and I taught a couple of classes there a few different years. And one of the things that struck me was the total
lack of community that I had been really struck by in Swansea, because it was in a building in the middle of this. It's not really a city, is it? It's a fairly good sized town, Rugby. But, you know, all that was gone. It was just, when there was three or four students in each year, they'd lost most of the numbers. And then within a few years, the whole thing was closed down and it's gone now, you know. And it's, you know, one of those things, isn't it, where something that was really, really special, okay, I'm sure it had its problems. You know, there's no perfect school, there's no perfect system. But it really was something special that lasted for over 100 years. And it's gone now. It's just, you know, once they changed that dynamic, and I'm sure other factors were involved as well that we don't know about. But, you know, so in a way, I don't know, do you feel you count yourself fortunate to have experienced some of that for a couple of years while it was still in Swansea?
Two of the best years of my life.
Yeah.
Two of the hardest years of my life.
Yeah. All
through the study and the development of me. At the time, I was engaged to my now wife. And she lived like 5 hours away from me.
Yeah.
And so being in this place where there's lots of young people around me and they're all kind of exploring and getting new relationships, and I'm in like this big long distance one, and you know, I've got to kind of keep my head down, get on with what I'm doing, and, you know, really try and take in as much as I could at that time. I was saying earlier that I was the one of only two people at that college that had come to faith in adulthood.
Right.
Let's say
they'd all been raised in the church.
They'd all
basically.
Been raised in the church, so they all yeah. had years of experience of what church looked like to them, what theology was to them.
Right.
To me, I came in and like every day was a learning day because,
yeah,
you know, there's only so much Bible you can read in 9 months, and there's only so many teachings you can hear in that time. Yeah.
The brain can only absorb so yeah. much.
And so every lecture was like an eye opener to me. And I'm not a skeptical person, but I'm very analytical, and I will break down something and I will go over it and I will weigh it and I'll measure it and I'll try and experience it. And if you're going to teach me something, I need to see every aspect of how that what you're saying is true or false.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to come to that any teaching and say, okay, you're wrong. I'm listening to you, but you're wrong, and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah.
I want to listen to you and say, right, okay, but what about this?
Yeah, explore different avenues and points of view and things. Yeah.
And I'm really, I like to think that I'm teachable, and I like to think that from that I learned a lot in those 2 years, not just the academic, but from the other kind of, the other people that I was around. I appreciate that time. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It can't be replicated. It just can't.
That's the thing, isn't it? That's gone now.
Yeah.
You know? And that's the thing, isn't it? You look back on it, you think, wow.
I was part of something really special. Now, when I came down there, I think you were in your second year, weren't you?
Can you tell us what happened after you finished Bible college? Because you did, even though they moved to Rugby, you finished your third year,
yeah.
you got your degree. Because I remember you came back to Chester then, and you were working with that same church that we were still a part of in Chester. But then I remember you were working in a restaurant. I'm thinking, wait a minute, here's a guy, you've done a theology degree at Bible college. What's happening that you're a chef in a restaurant in town? Can you walk us through what happened?
I am a big guy and I like my food. So
yep.
first and foremost, I mean, I've been very independent since I was like 15 years old. So I've always pretty much had to cook for myself, fend for myself. And so when it came to, whilst I was at college, I actually cooked for the other students.
Oh, right. So you've always loved cooking.
Yeah. So, and it going into college, one of the things that really hit me in my early years, my early stage of being a Christian, was the kind of the servant element of my faith. Like from day one, you know, I realized it wasn't about me. And during the whole time in the college, I was repeatedly hit over the head, not by the lecturers, but by God, by the other people that was around. It's not about you. Like, you know, don't worry so much about you, but there are people who need help. There are people who need to be served. You know, to be a leader is to serve, you know. And so when I came out of college, I had one goal, and that goal, one kind of dream, if anything, that I kind of thought that the outworking of everyone I'd learned would be to run some sort of community cafe, kitchen, foods. I wanted to feed people, not just in a spiritual sense, but in a physical sense. I felt like it's all right to tell them about Jesus, but if you're looking at someone who's starving and you tell them about Jesus, it doesn't fill their belly. You can fill someone's heart, brilliant, brilliant, but when they die the next day of starvation...
Yeah.
Like, you've failed.
Yeah.
If you had the power to feed them. Yeah. So
isn't there something in the Bible about that? What good is it to say,
be warmed and be filled, but if you haven't done anything to actually meet their needs, then it's just a waste of time. You haven't done anything, have you?
So I came out of Bible college, had my degree in theology, and I thought, do you know what? I've got the theory. I need to start learning some practice. So every job I've ever had, I like to think that that's been developing a tool for my tool chest.
Yeah.
And so I came out of college, and instead of being seeking ministry, like a full-time ministry, I was like, right, well, if I want to do that, I better learn how to cook properly. I need to learn how to cook en masse. Like, I need to develop that skill, because I can cook, but like, how do I cook 40 people? How do I cook to 500 people?
Yeah.
So I got a job in Carluccio's restaurant,
Italian restaurant.
I learned how to cook under pressure.
Yeah, that's high stress, isn't it, man?
It's high street, high quality, high stress. But it taught me all the skills about ordering, about food management, all of that. Yeah. I moved then on to a zoo. And I cut a shift in a zoo for a while. And that taught me about cooking for the masses as opposed to the delicate dishes.
Oh, the zoo.
Literally cooked in the zoo. I wasn't feeding the animals. It was the customers.
Yeah. Your food didn't end up in the troughs for them.
No. It was cooking in Chester Zoo. So that was my next step. And then following that, I went on to a nursery.
Ah.
So then I was cooking for the kids. So like every one of those jobs was not just... Like some chefs kind of just float from kitchen to kitchen.
Right.
For me, I was like, right, high end, mass, and now intricate. So cooking for kids is intricate. Like when you've got 50 kids in a nursery, this one doesn't take gluten. This one doesn't take peanuts. This one doesn't
take... You got to get it right. Yeah.
So every step of the way, I'm building my tool chest for getting to that end goal. And that, you know, that is still an end goal for me.
Mm.
And that was... 5 years ago that I came out of college, and I think the patience that I learned of recognizing that if that's where God wants me to be, if that's where I want to be, that is still going to come, but I've got to develop myself to reach that place. So even the job that I'm doing now kind of is part of building that tool chest.
Yeah. So what are you doing now then?
I work for a charity that provides support to families. So I recruit and train volunteers to go into a family home and support them when they're struggling.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm talking about feeding the families, and now I'm onto the supporting people.
Yeah.
Prior to that, I was working with adults with mental health problems. So that, for 2 years, working in that job taught me what mental health was.
Yeah.
How it affects people. How do you support someone with mental health? And this was like one-to-one, not very much personal care, but how do I help this person make their decisions in their day-to-day life?
Right.
What are the decisions that they're having to make in day-to-day life? Because they are held back by their medical, their physical makeup hinders them from participating in so much. So, I worked through that, and that helped me understand people.
Yeah.
Even my colleagues, understanding why people do the things that they do, even if they don't have a mental health problem.
Yeah.
Like, understanding my colleagues and their compassion compared to my compassion. I'm not saying mine's better, but, like...
I'm more compassionate than you.
You know, why have you stopped there? Why have you gone that bit further?
Yeah.
Every part of it is understanding people, understanding the needs of people. So now I'm working with families that... asylum seekers, refugees... people from domestic abuse backgrounds, people with addictions backgrounds, families that have gone through bereavement. So, like, I'm seeing humanity on its knees at times. And, you know, there are some families that we support that's not the case, and it's just that they're just struggling at this time.
Yeah.
It can be a very simple struggle. But I do get to see kind of behind the veil of humanity by seeing these people that are really struggling don't have somebody who stands up for them, and thankfully the charity that I work for is supporting these families. We're recruiting people who have that compassion and empathy to say, you know what, I've got a few hours this week, I can happily do that. And week to week they visit a family and support them practically, emotionally, you know, whatever a family could be struggling with. And so again, it's just another tool in the chest of understanding people, finding out what the needs are. And you know, when I do get to this big cafe, community center, whatever the heck it is, like I feel like I will be equipped to say, when someone comes in the door and they tell me that they're struggling, to be able to sit down, listen to them, and then figure out, okay, here's how we can help, or here's the help that you need, and let's get you
practical resources.
Now, you said something interesting when we were driving back from Hadrian's Wall, that one of the biggest values that you came out of Bible college with
was this idea of servanthood, you know, and everything that you've just been saying. What I've been hearing is that value coming out. Working in a restaurant, you know, a lot of people would say, now, wait a minute, Ryan, you went and got a degree at a Bible college, and then you went to work at an Italian restaurant. You were cooking in a zoo for the people and all this, and now you're working with families that are seeking asylum and everything else. But the core of the whole thing is potentially servanthood, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you could say, well, why didn't you go into quote-unquote full-time professional ministry. Why didn't you go work at a church? You know, that's viewed as a failure because you're not using your degree, you know. But practically, it sounds to me like you're using it every single day, even cooking in a restaurant and serving and learning a skill with a, you've got a dream. You want to do this cafe. You want to do these other things. That's all building pieces toward getting to that dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of serving and helping people. That's your heart.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, my degree doesn't apply to being a chef in a high street restaurant. But yeah. My degree is less about a piece of paper now and more about who I am.
Yeah, it's your identity.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I don't walk around telling everybody, you know, I've got a degree. But yeah. Like, to me, everything I learned in that time was part of developing me. And yeah. So when I went into that restaurant setting, there'll be stories that other chefs will tell you. But ultimately, I do believe that my presence in that was me being the Christian me.
Yeah. In being missional, yeah. To put it one way.
Don't get me wrong. Being a chef, I learned very quickly that when you're working on a high adrenaline rush for 12 hours, the only way that we were coming down from that was going out drinking for a few hours. Yeah. And, you know,
take the edge off.
Yeah. My life at that time got really shaky. But whilst doing that, I was also a small group leader in my church. Yeah. I also ran the Friday night youth club and on occasion taught on a Sunday morning when I could get it off work to the youth in the church that I was in. So, I mean, in addition to the 70 hours a week that I was working in the restaurant. But in the restaurant, I was making a difference because, I was building my my skills, but
yeah,
to those other chefs, they saw someone different. I wasn't another chef that came in.
Yeah,
I do believe that the kind of the way that I approached that was different to the way that they may have. I didn't come in with, you know, 10 years experience of being a chef, but very within the first month I received an unofficial promotion. Within the first 2 months I was running the pass, having never been a chef before.
Wow.
Within the first 6 months I was taking control of a whole shift without a head chef or a sous chef. So, you know, I was doing their job without more than 6 months experience.
Yeah.
And that was because of my attitude to my work, to my colleagues.
Your work ethic. Everything. Yeah.
And so my degree was in me. And so doing that and doing the ministry that I was doing within the church on top of my 70 hours was, you know, it was all in effect. Everything that I've learned is still in effect now because the way I approach families and seek to support them is based off of the skills that I have, the morals that are within me, the drive, the values, everything that has kind of been building in me, that has been opening up within me to kind of support people. I the servant side of it for me is really what kind of hit me hard in coming out of that Bible college time. Yeah. It's not about me. Like when I talk about my faith to people, it's not about what I believe. Like, it's about, you know, it's about people. You know, ultimately, if I believe something that's different to you, does it matter if we can, you know, build this bridge together?
Yeah.
Does it matter if we can help that person who's fallen over together? I don't care what you believe.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to enact what you believe?
Yeah.
Now, if your way of enacting what you believe draws us further away from each other, that's fine. I don't mind.
Right.
It just means that, you know, we weren't meant to kind of work on time.
Some things don't always work out.
That's fine.
All right, everybody. That is the first half of my conversation with Ryan Warren that I recorded a few weeks ago up in Carlisle, England. I hope you enjoyed our conversation, and please be sure and join me next Friday for part two of my interview with Ryan. I really enjoyed some of the things that we got into in this conversation. One of the things that I took away from it was this idea of getting perspective on life. You know, so much of the time we tend to focus on our accomplishments, and that gives us a sense of identity or value or worth. And I like what Ryan said, you know, for him, getting a degree from a recognized Bible college down in Wales wasn't so much a thing of him saying, well, I'm super special because I've got this degree, but rather it was about the person he was becoming in the process of getting the degree. And then, you know, going to work in a restaurant would seem like a wrong turn in a way. You know, you've got this degree from a Bible college. Why aren't you working in a church or doing some sort of quote unquote ministry? But working in a restaurant was his way of learning a whole new skill set, because he has this dream of opening up a cafe that he can use as a resource to help anyone who's struggling, needy families. And even him working up in Glasgow now, up in Scotland, you know, he has a job where he works with families who are struggling, who have mental health problems in the family, or families who are seeking asylum here in the United Kingdom. And again, this is, as he says, a means to add more tools to his toolbox so that he can help and serve other people. And I think that's a really good perspective to have on life, isn't it? Where we get frustrated sometimes. I get frustrated because I think, you know, what am I doing? Where am I going? I've got these accomplishments, but they're not doing anything for me. But it's really about the person that we're in the process of becoming, I think, is what I can take away. And hopefully you'll take away from this conversation with Ryan. Now, if that sounds interesting to you, please make sure and tune in next Friday for the second half. We're going to get into some conversations with Ryan about his experiences in church and about religion. And so be sure and come back next Friday for the second half of my conversation. Just before I let you go, I want to remind you there's a few different ways you can get a hold of me if you want to communicate. You can send me an email, preachersforum@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @preachersforum. You can also find me on Instagram, the same name, @preachersforum. You can take a look at my Facebook page and like that Facebook page and interact with me there, facebook.com/thepreachersforum. And finally, if you get a minute, please rate and review this show on either Podbean or iTunes, because that will help with the visibility and the ratings of the show. So once again, I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock, and please be sure and join me for part two of my conversation with Ryan Warren, coming to you next week here on the Preachers Forum podcast.